Thank you for listening to the Highlander Podcast, where we have conversations about the past, present, and future of the outdoor industry. Thanks to Utah State University's Outdoor Product Design and Development Program for making it possible and for training the future product leaders of the outdoor industry. Learn more about the program at opdd.usu.edu. The Highlander Podcast is sponsored by the Outdoor Recreation Archive, a collaboration between OPDD and USU Special Collections to preserve the history and print materials of the people, products, and brands of the outdoor industry. Follow the archive at Outdoor Rec Archive on Instagram. The Highlander Podcast is sponsored by the Utah Outdoor Association, a business association focused on elevating Utah's outdoor industry through educational programming and events. Their membership consists of Utah's outdoor manufacturers, retailers, outfitters, and guides. Member benefits include networking opportunities, recruitment of talent, and brand promotion. More information about volunteering and membership is available at utahoutdoor.org. On this episode of the Highlander Podcast, Carmela Montenegro, a DEI consultant with experience working with brands like REI, spoke with students about company culture, values, and how to determine whether a brand aligns with your goals as a potential employee.
Since you all are in the last 2 years of your program, I wanted to focus this to be a little bit more actionable, how to do research on organizations as you're picking companies. When I was going through the job search, I know there's going to be dozens of companies that you're going to want to pick from. I'm going to be sharing ways that I advise a lot of people from marginalized communities on how to search for jobs in a way that's not going to harm them psychologically, and in a way that'll develop them appropriately over the next couple of years. So these are generalizations of things that I advise a lot of people from marginalized communities in when it comes to that job search. So feel free to pop questions in the chat. I have them on my second screen here. I'll answer those when I finish a slide. And if you don't have any questions, I'm just gonna go for it. So a little bit about me. I'm a research-driven DEI consultant. Most of my work and research is in the outdoor industry, particularly in the ski resorts. I've done work for several ski resorts, the NSAA, National Skiers Association, PSIA, Professional Ski Instructors Association of America. I always forget if there's an extra A there. So that's where most of my work is driven and research is in. But I also do this for REI. I do this for one specific store in Dillon, Colorado, but I also collaborate with several other REIs throughout the state of Colorado when it comes to equity work, long-term training, and ways to make our work more authentic. That way, when we look to hire, retain, and recruit from diverse communities, there's that level of authenticity. And I want to make sure that alignment is there and we're not trying to sweep diverse candidates under the rug once they get into our team. So that's some kind of stuff that I do. I have a background in marketing, and I'm currently a candidate at the Outdoor Industry MBA at Western Colorado University. And I'm going to be doing research on what equity work is going to be truly impactful long-term and how to make it more authentic when you're in a time crunch or in a budget crunch. I'm also aiming to get a PhD in organizational psychology and hopefully join a university somewhere when my knees are like broken or whatever. And I want to be a university professor someday. Who knows? Okay. Topics I'm going to cover: reading team structures. Again, kind of focusing this presentation to be how can you research this on your own. And reading team structures is something that is hard to find sometimes. And I'll share specific ways on how I recommend those as we're going through different steps. With the line of work that I do, it's going to be easier for me to access that information. So I had to review how I did this back in the job search, back in the days when I had to do job search. Generally, before I continue on what's on my slide, most of the ways that I recommend doing the job search is through Glassdoor, LinkedIn, and figuring out how to get emails of potential potential managers, leaders, and coworkers at the ideal organization. I also have a pretty decent sales background, so I'm not ashamed to have to cold email somebody. We can talk about those a little bit later as well if we have time, but those are things that I do, and I recommend most job seekers, especially the ones that want to go higher up, as a strategy when it comes to moving up in the salary range. Okay, back to the slides. Reading team structures, how to research those, things that you would want to look for when you're looking at potential workplaces, benefits. There is a lot of talk in HR, people operations, and DEI world about how can we keep team morale up, how can we keep retention up outside of pay. Well, we'll talk about this later, but pay is becoming becoming harder to increase. So they're trying to figure out how to become leaner on the people side. And we can talk about ways that we can research that as we're looking for organizations. Policies and support. So what are specific policies that you want to look for? Who are your support systems within that organization? How to find that and what you can do with that? Some Q&A. And just to wrap up. Okay, we're doing good on time. So, ratio of team to HR. So I've worked with organizations where there's one HR person or two HR people to 400 people. I have a client right now who is 45-ish full-time employees with no HR staff. And I've seen organizations have one HR person to 20, 25 employees. So that is going to vary depending on your organization. It's going to vary on the team structure and the needs. On average, you're looking for about 1.5 to 4.5 HR employees or HR people per 100 employees, excuse me. And again, that'll vary depending on full-time to part-time people and industries. In the tech spaces, for example, I worked for tech companies. You're going to have better ratios between HR to employees because they understand that most of their profits are going to be people based instead of being product based. Here we go. When you're looking at roles, compare that ratio to other companies. So what I recommend job seekers do, let's say you're looking at BOA Technologies versus Burton Snowboard and Skis. Let's choose two pretty different parts of the outdoor industry. Look at the HR ratio to full-time staff ratio and figure out how much support you would want from the HR team when it comes to personal development training, understanding your rights within an organization, and how much development you can receive when you're looking at HR, people operations, or learning development in an organization. So keep that in mind as you're looking at different organizations. Again, it can depend on how much you want to grow and how much you want protection as an employee. Okay, understanding company structures. This is something is kind of challenging to figure out. So in most organizations, your HR is going to report to chief people officer, chief HR officer, or chief culture officer. For example, BOA Technologies report to the chief culture officer. Everybody reports to the chief culture officer. What that means is how prioritized are the people within that organization? So for example, let's say director of HR at Black Diamond. Let's choose Black Diamond, for example. I'm not completely sure. Their director of HR, if they're reporting to somebody that is not chief people officer, chief HR officer, chief culture officer, or CEO. It'll say a lot about how they prioritize people. One specific example is if they don't report to these four people, is that they go to CFO, chief financial officer. When it goes to CFO, there's going to be a tighter analysis on input output per employee. So for example, in the ski industry, there's going to be an average, what is it? How much, let's say the ski instructor is making $20 an hour. They worked 4 hours. They're investing $80 into this one employee. Are they getting their money's worth out of that employee? So they're looking for input output per employee. If they're reporting to like chief CFO, chief financial officer. With that being said, in the tech industry, I haven't seen this much in the outdoor industry, but in the tech industry, if people report to the CFO, that means there will have to be, there tends to be higher scrutiny toward each employee. And there's more, at least from what I've seen, there's more restructuring within an organization. And so restructuring, if you don't know what that means, is essentially laying off or changing titles of employees in an organization. This happens, again, more often in the tech industry if anybody happens to pivot that way. In the outdoor industry, I don't see it that much. But in the outdoor industry for really big companies, I've heard people switch from reporting to CEO to CFO, and that changes how they analyze people. Sometimes you can find this information on Glassdoor. And I found this information when I'm interviewing employees at a company that I'm very interested in. Most of the time when I was applying for jobs, I asked who they reported to, and they sent me like the hierarchy of how the organization works. And it's important to keep that in mind, again, because it can tell you how they prioritize people in an organization and how much scrutiny an organization is going to be in. This is something that not a lot of people look into, but I think it's really important, especially if you're early in your career and you're trying to figure out like, do I want to be in a more, I guess, more ambitious environment versus a more casual environment where they are more cautious about my well-being versus my output. So that's something to keep in mind when you're looking at company structures. How do you ask for an org? Okay, Chase asked, how do you ask for an org chart or other information to better understand a company structure during an interview or as a job seeker? Yeah, so I'm going to answer on the interview side. For example, when I would have an interview with an organization, they allow like 5 to 10 minutes, depending on what time is left, to say, do you have any questions for us? One question that I ask is, how is people structured within your organization? Does it report to the CEO, CFO, chief revenue officer, or anybody else in an organization? And they'll answer based on the knowledge that they have right now. Most recruiters and hiring managers should have that information ready when they're going through job interviews. It's not a common question. But that answer should be available to most employees in an organization. As a job seeker, I essentially have that question at the same time, in the same way. So for example, I was searching for marketing roles. I was talking to a friend, or now friend, who would have been my director. And I asked, who does marketing report to? Does marketing report to chief marketing officer, chief revenue officer, or chief financial officer? And that, again, says a lot about how that structure is going to be. You can ask the exact same question again. Who does X department report to? And sometimes if you have time, I would ask, how does that impact results and KPIs, key performance indicators, within this organization and structure? One time I've asked for an org chart, and the best I got was like a hand-drawn version on Zoom. That might, if you're asking for like a specific like strategy and layout, sometimes you'll get something like that. I haven't seen many organizations have a formal org chart that is not, that can be shared to people who do not work for that organization. So if you're asking for a specific org chart, you might not get the specific layout there. Okay. Good question. Good question. Okay. What do we have here? ERGs, affinity groups, and social groups. I know a lot of people who come from historically marginalized communities want employee resource groups, affinity groups, or social groups. And it's important to understand the difference between each of these. Employee resource groups, you get paid to be a part of these groups, and you have stake in company outcomes. So usually if there is an employee resource group in an organization, there's going to be a senior leadership team or a DEI or JEDI committee, whatever it may be, an equity group, where they're going to report desired outcomes to. For example, we had a group, they're shifting from affinity. So affinity group is like the same thing, but they're not paid. And there's not as much, they don't have to report as much to a DEI committee or a senior leadership team. Where was I going with that? Everything would go through this committee, and usually it goes from social group, which is non-formal, unpaid, kind of just hanging out after work, whereas affinity group is unpaid and can have some stake in company outcomes, whereas ERGs will be paid and have a heavier stake within company outcomes. So if you're passionate about climate change, you can join like a climate change, or it's technically a BRG, business resource group, where it's more business function instead of identity based. There'll be like sustainability BRGs or LGBTQ ERGs that can have stake within an organization. So there's the hierarchy, social group to affinity group to ERG. And if you want to have more involvement, sometimes ERGs can even report to the board of directors, depending on the organization as well. So keep that in mind if you're passionate about social change, equity change, or if you're passionate about sustainability or marketing, and there's not enough marketing structure within an organization, there's going to be ERGs for that. So to find this kind of information, you can go to an organization's impact report. For example, VF Corp. We're going to choose VF Corp. VF Corp, in their impact report, about one third into the report, there's going to be where they invest in people and culture. It's going to have examples of their employee resource groups and their social groups. And that's one way to look for ERGs and affinity groups. You can also find if they don't have an impact report, which is increasingly popular for the outdoor industry, you can look at careers or our team or their social media pages. For example, Strava has under, I believe, careers or join the team, there's going to be a section on ERGs. They used to update what specific ERGs they had within their organization, but I'm guessing things have shifted so much that they don't do that anymore. That's pretty common, especially after 2020 with COVID. You can also look for social media pages. There, it's not common, but sometimes an ERG will have like a LinkedIn page or a secret Facebook page or something to kind of see if the organization is active, or to see kind of see what kind of work they're doing. I know for my former client, they have like an ERG affinity group that is only for the internal team and for alumni to join as well. So it's kind of important if you're, again, looking for unique structures within an organization. And then just to talk a little bit about DEI committees, those are usually directly attached to the senior leadership team, and ERGs tend to report to these committees. Usually a DEI group or senior leadership team associated with DEI will come before an ERG, but once in a while, an ERG or affinity group will happen first. Here we go. Okay, learning and development. So within my research with a couple of organizations, the top five things that, at least in the ski industry where I've done this research, the top five things in no particular order that people look into or why they stay around at a company, is going to be pay, mentorship / learning and development, employee benefits, sense of community and belonging, and I am blanking out. Wow. I don't remember. They'll probably come back to me, but those are four of the five that I've seen. Earlier in the class, I've talked about how pay is becoming more challenging as we're going through a series of recessions. I've talked to several job seekers and that are in the outdoor industry looking to pivot, enter, or re-enter into the outdoor industry. Five out of six job seekers that I've talked to in the last couple of weeks have said something along the lines of, pay is important, but culture is more important to me. So I'm going to share a little bit about what can signal a more desired culture. So learning and development. Usually, this is not as common in the outdoor industry, but once in a while, this will be present. L&D, learning and development. A lot of people want to develop themselves personally and professionally. This is something that you can look for in an organization. Learning and development. And if there is no L&D, learning and development person within your organization, you can, one thing that I do in LinkedIn is to look at potential coworkers or managers and see if they've posted anything about a mentorship program. Otherwise, you can just email or DM a hiring manager or recruiter, simply asking if there's some sort of formal or informal mentorship program in place. Mentorship programs, again, really great for personal and professional development, but it's also going to be a really good signal if for upward level mobility, since mentorship programs are an easy way to move up in a company. Okay, company size. So there's going to be small, medium, large, and then extra large companies. For example, Icelandic, 10, 12 people, small company. 51 to 400-ish people. BOA, US-based, is pretty, well, the Denver office is pretty mid-sized, whereas 400 to 1,000 people, BOA National, pretty freaking huge. I know there's like 900 employees on LinkedIn or something like that. And then 1,000 employees and more. REI, for example, there's thousands of employees, not just in retail space, like a ton on the HQ level as well. So as you're looking for that, consider, are you going to be working in an office or are you considering the office space, the state or national or international base? Because that'll change how structure is going to be in an organization. I'm going to pick BOA, for example. There's the Colorado office, which is based out of Denver, and the national and then international offices. So BOA down in Denver is running more like a mid-sized business. Everybody's going to be honed into their role, but there's going to be that sense of community within each person. Most of the employees are, I believe, on the hybrid model, a majority of them at least. But it's under a bigger umbrella in the United States. So it's going to be more challenging, for example, to understand policies, nuances, and change those, especially when it comes to pay and parental leave, easy examples. And when it comes international, it's going to, when you go to more high level, it's going to be more challenging to understand and more challenging to understand, navigate, and translate some of their documentation. So depends on how much you want to impact the environment, but also how much work and relationships you want to have within your organization. The smaller the organization overall and the smaller the office, the more likely you're going to do jack of all trades, build systems, and have more intimate relationships with your coworkers, whereas bigger organizations are more likely going to be super specialized and have a better chance of high quality mentorship and company-based resources, like ERGs, for example. The bigger the organization, the more likely there is going to be that. For example, REI, there are no store level ERGs, but there are national level and state level ERGs. So those are important to keep in mind if you're looking for something smaller within something big. And then, okay, flat versus hierarchical. This is something that's becoming a little bit more popular within the retail spaces, at least what I've seen. So for example, at REI, we have managers or senior managers versus managers and directors. It sounds like a small nuance, but it essentially explains the hierarchy within an organization. A senior manager implies more flat organization, whereas the manager and director have a more hierarchical organization. The more hierarchical an organization, it'll be more challenging to break through layers. The more you have to understand policies before you get to that next level, especially if you want to move up. Whereas more senior specialists is that it implies more experience rather than power. So that's something to keep in mind as you're looking at organizations. With flatter organizations, you can have flatter organizations with less hierarchy. It's easier to give feedback. It's easier to look at your senior manager on a more equal level. And it's easier to receive or it's easier to communicate with them. Whereas more hierarchical organizations, it's going to have a more predictable chain of command, and a more predictable method of communication in case you encounter problems in the workplace. Policies and supports. Here we go. Okay. Policies. When you're looking at ideal policies, these are things that can create cost within a company. So it's important to figure out your priorities. For example, if you want to have kids someday, look at the parental leave. In the tech industry, I've seen a tech company do up to 3 months of parental leave for both parents and adopting, which I think is fascinating. And you would be eligible for that, I believe, after like 1 or 2 years of working for an organization. For outdoor companies, I've seen 2 to 4 weeks of parental leave. That'll vary depending on what the budgeting is going to look like. One really interesting thing that I found is if somebody requires employees to be in office, is if you identify as Muslim, is there a prayer room or a lactation room or a room where you can have some privacy for a little bit of time? It's becoming a hotter topic of conversation when we're talking about DEI in the workplaces, especially since a lot of the outdoor industry wants people within the office. And the pushback on that is if companies can support smoke breaks, you should have time to practice your religious beliefs. So that's the pushback there whenever companies are wanting more diversity in their workplaces. So to find that kind of information, usually if possible, I ask to do a tour around the location. But if that is not possible at the same time, usually people will talk about it on LinkedIn, either through their personal professional account or the business account. And sometimes it'll also be in like, once in a while, it'll be in like the careers or about our culture page of the website. Let's see. And support. If possible, I try and do research. I try to understand who is the potential manager, director, or department. And I do research on that specific department when I am in Glassdoor or on LinkedIn. These people should be able to support you when things go wrong. And it's important, I think this is one of the most important things to do before you join a workplace, is to understand the department and who you work for, because this is the person who will essentially determine how long you're going to stay within an organization. I believe it was something like 30 to 50% of how, or what determines how long you're going to be at an organization is who your relationship with your manager. Are they going to be micromanaging? Are they going to be supportive? Are they going to help you move up and leapfrog upward? So that relationship you have with your manager is going to be probably the most important relationship you have with an organization. So as much as possible, like, do your research on this person. Here we go. And here's just some samples of policies and support that we've implemented at REI and have loosely implemented in clientele. Flexible holidays for people who have different religious beliefs. If you identify as non-Catholic, whereas most businesses are based on the Catholic beliefs and holiday system, keep in mind holidays that are important to you. Forgiveness of time. If you identify on spectrum, you have bipolar disorder, ADHD, autism, OCD, forgiveness of time. I know some organizations that move past the hour structure and go on project-based structure. This is not common, but it happens in some organizations. And if you know you can do a project within two hours versus 4 hours, sometimes they can just do you project-based pay. And if you go for that project-based pay, it might be beneficial to consider yourself a contractor or go independent at that point. And then support people. What does support look like within the organization? Are they more likely to give you feedback, or are they more likely to fire you and move on? There are organizations that have high retention or high turnover rates. And there's people who will take a second chance on you if you're struggling. So, and that's something that I recommend everybody, again, try and talk to their potential manager and potential coworkers, and you can find that information in those conversations. But I think that is it. Does anybody have any questions? Okay. Question, where do we go? What are some companies that are inclusive and good examples of a positive work culture? Really good question. So whenever I look at organizations, I base it off of the five stages of DEI maturity by Ella Washington, who wrote, this is a free article on Harvard Business Review. I do my best guesses, and I base it off of the five stages of DEI maturity. In the outdoor industry, Quality Bike Parts is one of my favorite organizations. The reason I like them is because I have a personal friend who was their chief diversity officer, and they're still running high quality DEI efforts while they were or are, I think they're wrapping up on it, looking for a chief diversity officer. They have several ERGs, and I've had conversations with their employees and they just have really good high level conversations. They're asking about, sometimes you just got to go and you just got to get a vibe check. I'm asking like, how are conversations between you and your managers? What kind of pushback do you see when you're asking for feedback? And what are your general thoughts if you were to hire your Black friend that doesn't have experience in this kind of work? Usually asking a more sensitive question like that will kind of signal how the company in general would respond. I've talked to organizations where I'm like, do you feel comfortable if I were to recommend my Black friend who has not worked in an organization like this? And if they say no, that'll be an easy signal if this is going to be a good company or not. Sometimes you just ask of what that organization can do. Feel free to ask follow-up questions on there's more questions in here than I thought. Do you have any advice contacting people via cold email? Yes, I have a sales background. So let's say, let's pick Burton, for example. Let's say I want to join their marketing team. I want to be one of their social media managers. I figure out who that hiring manager could be. Usually if you're on LinkedIn, it'll say like who the hiring manager is. If you have LinkedIn Premium, you go on that profile and then you can get that contact information directly. Otherwise, you can look up that person. What I've done is I looked up that person on Apollo and then I cross-referenced that email back into Teal HQ. So my email is, or I go into their profile. I have it on my second screen. I say, "Hey, Morgan, love your profile. I've seen how much work you've done in Burton. I really like your work. I really loved your campaign when it came to remembering Jake. I'm interested in your social media manager position. I was wondering if you're available 12 p.m. on Thursday to see how I can be a stronger candidate in my resume." So there's three key things in there that I want to signal that work really well in sales. One, you have to remember they're human. You got to schmooze up to them a little bit, know that you've done your research. And that also signals to them that you care other than sending out a generic email. Two, you're looking for a specific time. It puts a little less work on their end. 12 p.m. on Thursday, they don't have to like go into their schedule and be like, okay, that's either a yes or a no. And then they can, and that usually offers another invitation for them to suggest another time. And three, you have a specific reason, specific thing you want to ask them about. If you're asking to pick their brain, they're more likely to say no because it's an open-ended question. Whereas asking them, what is something that you like, that you want in an ideal client? They can answer that rather than a simple yes, no. And then no, if you have a yes, no, it's more likely going to be a no, can I pick your brain? So those are three different things in sales tactics that you want as you're doing cold emails. And during hiring heats, you might want to double tap 3 to 5 times, depending on how many people are applying for this job. People are busy. Sometimes you just have to check in once a week for the next couple of weeks. Most of my cold emails when I was doing the job search came around email 3 or 4 when you have to continuously double tap with them. So yeah, cold email, if you are very good at it, can be amazing for you. Because I know a lot of people that broke into the tech industry with cold email. Okay, Caitlin's question. When you are first entering the workforce, how can you figure out what workplace culture would work best for you? Yeah, this is something that I recommend based, think about what you enjoy learning at school and think about what your experiences are if you've had any work up until like now. Think about, do you want, one of the first things that I recommend is, do you want to build something from scratch? Do you want to build systems? Do you want to experiment? Or do you want to, or are you like, I know that I want to be a social media manager someday. I want to be super niche. I want to do graphics within social media. The more niche you are, you're going to want to be in a bigger part of a bigger organization. Whereas if you want to build stuff from scratch. So for example, I was a senior marketing manager for a tech startup based out of Milwaukee. I had to build email sequences. I had to build click-throughs. I had to test call to actions. So that's one of the first things that I recommend is understanding what size organization you want to do and what you want to do and if it's specific enough. For you. And also understanding, are you going to be part of a bigger team or are you going to be a team of one? I know, let's say Mountain Flow EcoWax, they're a team of like 8 employees, I think. So I know most of the employees have a hand on like designing product boxes and sustainability. Everybody's got a hand in the sustainability efforts. Whereas Arc'teryx, for example, 250 employees or something like that, I think. Product design teams are anywhere between 10 to 14 people, if I remember correctly. Everybody's going to have a super specific niche within that organization. Do I want to work within a team or do I want to kind of do this by myself? And do I want to work in a team that is like general to everybody, like Mountain Flow EcoWax, or do I want to be like Arc'teryx where I'm going to solely work within one product line? So those are like things that I like to consider. But also as you're looking for jobs, be very specific in what you want as you're building network connections as well. The more niche and specific you're looking for a job, the easier it is for them to send you referrals to other people and be specific in where they could place you in an organization if they're doing that kind of flexibility. Could you review why structures are important? You were saying that reporting to a CEO versus CFO makes a difference, but I didn't catch what that was. Okay. So let's pretend I am director of HR at Burton. She's the one that comes to mind. I am going to report. I'm not completely sure how they structure this. I haven't done my research on Burton, but let's say I'm director of HR, reporting to CEO. My report would be like, okay, this is how many people we have on the team. This is their output. This is learning and development. This is our recommendations for the next for the rest of the year. And what these are recommendations for the fiscal year. So it's going to be a more general overview on how that relates to the rest of the team. But let's say Burton restructured and director of HR is moving to report to the chief financial officer. My reports are going to be we paid Ethan $1,000. Output was $1,200. This department output is more... like we put in $1, we get $1.2 back per department, per employee. It's going to be more financially based. And if we go to the chief financial officer, they're going to be like, okay, that department is not doing well. Is there anything we can do to restructure that or move people around so we can be more, we can have an better ROI per employee? So there's more likely to be scrutiny under CFO, whereas CEO, there's going to be those kinds of reports, but also it's going to be more general in conjunction with all the other C-suite members. Hopefully that makes a little more sense.
It sounds like ultimately it comes down to like incentives for leadership, right? It's like, what are their different incentives? And the CFO, it's more financially driven versus if there's a chief people officer, they're looking at different metrics of success, you know, not just purely like the dollars and cents of
exactly,
you know, keeping their employees happy.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Way better than I put it.
No, that was great. That's super helpful. That's not something we've really talked about before, is looking at structures and figuring out like what that does to culture. So that's super valuable. We just about hit our time. How's the best way to interact with you in the future, follow your work, stay in touch? We don't want to necessarily flood your inbox unless you're open to that, but how's the best way to stay in touch with you and your work?
Yeah. So the best way to stay in touch with my work, let's see. I have my email subscription list, which I recommend people sign up for. I share examples of things that I see in the workplace and how to be better advocates for yourself, but also how to do the internal work. So that's my LinkedIn. Feel free to connect with me. I'm pretty active on there. As Chase knows, I'm not really good at answering my messages, but I will get to you eventually. I like talking to a lot of people. I think it's really important to see what's going on in different parts of the industry. And then I have my business email here. Feel free to email me if you have any questions, or if you're looking on my LinkedIn and you're like, you have a really strong connection to Icelandic skis. I can send you connections that way. I'm pretty well connected, especially when it comes to businesses in Colorado through B Corp and ski industries. Those are mostly where I work. If you ever just want to like chat or pick my brain, or if you want to practice like your sales email, you can send it to my email and I can give you feedback on those. Or if you want to practice your job search abilities, you're more than welcome to message me on LinkedIn or email me. I want to be utilized as a resource. Because job hunting is hard. We're kind of in a mild recession right now. So whatever I can do to support you all, I feel free to hit me up.
That's great. Carmela, thank you so much for the time and for being willing to support students outside of class too.
Thanks for listening to the Highlander Podcast. For more conversations with outdoor leaders, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, watch episodes on the Outdoor Product Design and Development YouTube channel or on opdd.usu.edu/podcast. Follow along on Instagram @USU Outdoor Product and let us know how you're enjoying the show.